National Rock Review.
Okay, National Rock Review, boys and girls, this is Eric Morris talking to you with today's biggest stars, the stars that are going to be big tomorrow, and people who, well, let's just say that their calendar programs haven't been their friends lately. So without further ado, we'll just jump into this interview, and who is my somewhat tardy, not really by his own fault, person on the phone today?
Kevin Martin, Chatterbox, hello.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Kevin, so I just wanted to say thank you so much for talking to us here at National Rock Review again. The last time we caught up with you, you were doing your acoustical sets in the lower part of Michigan, and on behalf of everyone here at National Rock Review, we did want to wish you a belated birthday.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
So you are a busy man. You don't seem to sleep very often, stay in place very often, even less. You guys have some pretty big things going on. One of those is a new album that's getting ready to come out, I believe, April 22nd, if I'm not mistaken. And what can you tell me about it?
Well, yeah, it is April 22nd, which is kind of crazy. It's funny, you know, we've been known over the past few years to release a record every 4 years, which is, you know, it's quite a change. And the fact that this is this close to coming out 2 weeks out from yesterday, Friday, whatever it is, I'm really happy. It's called Disappearing in Airports. We recorded it last September and October, over 12 days total in Pennsylvania. And we did it with Carson Slovak and Grant McFarland of the August Burns Red production Grammy nomination album. They're really brilliant dudes, and we had a great time. You know, they gave us an opportunity to make the record we wanted to make, and they really kept us focused. So we're very excited about it. It's a very cohesive record, and it's kind of relentless in the mode that it starts and finishes, and you don't realize it's done. You don't want to skip a song, which I think is interesting for us. You know, we've had albums that, you know, that song, you know, move on to the next one. This record, I can't skip it, and it's weird. I listen to it every day. I was actually listening to it when you called. I'm very proud of this album, and I love the stories behind the songs. I love the inspiration with each track. I love the guys that played on it, and I loved actually making this record a lot. It was really nice to be under that pressure to create an album that I didn't think I could make, so I'm quite surprised by it.
Well, you've certainly opened a can full of delicious worms, question-wise. Let me just start off. There is even a backstory with the album art of the new release. What's the backstory on that?
Well, the reason it's called Disappearing in Airports is that's the name of the painting on the front of the album. I had asked the artist, Scott Weaver-Swisher, to do a piece of the record. I sent him the music, and also they're really, we're old friends, know one another a long time, and I love this work, and I said, I'd love to represent you with this record, and are you cool? And he said, yeah, so I would love to do that. And in the process of him starting the album, artwork, unfortunately, he was 41 years old, had a massive heart attack, and died, and didn't get to finish what he started on. So his sister contacted me and said, we have this piece that is his favorite, he's never shown it, and he'd like to actually take a look at it and consider it for the album art. And the minute I saw it, I knew that it was exactly what we needed for the cover. But there's so much in it. There's so many elements of this piece of work that represent this album that I called it and said I would be honored to honor Scott with this album cover and this piece of work. So that's really what it's all about. It's just paying homage to this guy's talent. He had just started out as an abstract artist, and I know that he was probably going to make a real name for himself as an artist. So it's really just an honor to have it represent our art.
Okay. Now, as far as the crew that you have surrounding you that makes up this version of Candlebox, you have two very new guitarists in the fold, if you will, and they bring with them a much bluesier feel to this album. What did you have to do to get these guys to come aboard, and how much of a difference have they made on the sound on this album?
Well, Mike, who's from Detroit, Mike Leslie, I had did a last, what you're talking about, those shows I played last year with Bobby Amaru from Saliva. Mike had reached out to me today and let me come up and play some of these songs with you for the first night. I was like, sure, man, I'd love it. And he ended up staying with me for the entire four-show tour. And we just really bonded musically. His style of playing is something that I'm absolutely 100% addicted to. He's got such a B.B. King's Jimi Hendrix vibe to him. Those are two of my favorite blues artists of all time. So it was a no-brainer to ask him to join the band. Brian is somebody that I played with a couple of shows back in 2008, 2009, 2010. We were label mates with Sound of Majority. He was in a band called Foster Child. And we just kept in touch and we're good friends, and we'd asked him actually to jam on the Slippery J project with Adam and I have more than a from seven of us. So again, it was just a no-brainer. Two entirely different players, two entirely different musicians, but both of them just so full of soul and life and are playing, and I think that that's why the record feels the way it does. You know, I'm a consummate drummer, and that's what I listen to when I listen to records, and that's what I watch when I go to see shows. I always watch the drummer. That's how I started. I'm kind of a reluctant singer of a rock band. But I pay more attention to the guitar work on this record than I do the drums, which I find very interesting for myself, which means I'm very, very happy with how these guys play and the emotion that they put into their playing on each song of this record. So it seemed effortless to them, which I think is how you're supposed to make a record, and that's the big difference. You know, Pete is such a perfectionist, and dare I say, the greatest guitar player that I've ever played with, and one of the greatest guitar players of the 90s. But studio-wise, he could make, you know, a week's worth of recording last 3 weeks just because of his innate desire to have things be perfect, and I'm not cutting that cloth. You know, I love the Rolling Stones, and you know, he's a Rush fan, if you will. So those elements, a lot of times in the studio, made it a little bit more difficult to make a record that felt loose and vibrant and visceral. And these guys are entirely visceral, and that's what I love about it.
There is a quote, and I'm paraphrasing, that's out there, that basically you said making this album, it pushed you outside of your comfort zone, and that you sort of needed it. Why exactly did you feel that you needed to kind of go out of the, you know, the David Grohl and Foo Fighters, where you know you're going to get the same Foo Fighter sound every album? Why did you feel you needed to go outside the box, if you will?
Well, there's an entire audience that I've never reached. And a lot of these kids that grew up with us now have kids. And they're bringing it to the shows. And I want to reach an audience that goes to Bonnaroo. I want to reach an audience that goes to Outlands Festival. I want to reach an audience that does Coachella, that does Glastonbury, that does Reading. And that's something we haven't been able to do for a long, long time. And I needed to make a record that expanded my horizon, if you will. When you sell 4 or 5 million records, yeah, it gives you a career, and it's a long-lasting career. I'm not concerned about selling 4 or 5 million records anymore. I'm concerned about an audience that doesn't know who I am, an audience that's looking for something different. It's an audience that's looking to enjoy themselves and then may know one or two of our old songs, not somebody who knows every song we've ever done. I know that audience is always going to be there for me, and I love them for it. But I need somebody different. And that's why I need to keep pushing outside of the comfort zone. And Grant and Carson really did that. You know, I'm not comfortable singing this. I'm not sure if my audience is going to appreciate this. And they're like, that's good. That's where we need to go. Go with it. And I couldn't be happy. I mean, I'm glad they pushed me the way they did.
Now, with that being said, did that change the style that you took to write the songs, especially with bringing Mike and Brian on, or was it pretty much the same, I don't want to call it the process, but was it a familiar path to write the songs, or did everything kind of get changed on this album?
It was a total shock. I mean, to be able to do 12 songs in 4 days, drums and bass, excuse me, overdubs on guitars, sorry, being on tour, that's what happens to the voice, guitars in 2 days being done, and then vocals in six, that's something that's really rare. When we did Love Stories, we only did 8 songs in 13 days. And so I think that being pushed in the corner the way we were, and doing it to ourselves as well, is why we were able to be so, I guess, aggressive with this record and productive. It's not a way that I've ever made an album, and I don't think I ever want to go back to any other way. It was so much fun and so easy, and like I said, effortless. So, and not even just Brian and Mike, you know, Dave Grusin, historically, you know, he's played on the last 4 Cannibox records, Happy Bills, Into the Sun, Love Stories, Other Music, Extreme Airports. He's a phenomenal drummer. And to allow him the freedom to play however he wants to play inspired an enormous amount of these songs, not only from the bass perspective, but guitars and vocals. And that's why I think every record I'm making on him to make it that way.
Okay. Now, you brought up the tour. You are currently out right now, and kudos to whoever put you in Texas with all this white stuff that came through not too long ago in the great Midwest. Who are you out with? Because that's kind of an interesting choice, I would say, to go ahead as an opener. How did that all come about?
Picking Rollwater, being from Athens, Georgia, you know, we like that kind of dirty blues-based rock and roll. To keep kind of that attitude of direction court right before we go on was instrumental, and they're great guys. You know, we came alive, we knew who they were, and we always try to bring in a band that our audience doesn't know. Because we want to, you know, obviously have them explore new music, and we want to expose them to a different style. So that was one of the reasons for the Low War. And then PRG is on the more ethereal Leonard Cohen side of things. That's just because we love him. And, you know, Pete's a great guy, and everybody in the band's cool, and Adam and Dave are members of PRG as well. So it's also an ease of, you know, relationships of being on one tour bus together and knowing that we like one another and we don't have to deal with kind of people that you're not really, you know, related to in some sort of way, friendship-wise or whatever. So it's really about exposing the audience to different things and having them experience different types of music, very much like we did with Mother Tongue and the Flaming Lips back in 1994. We wanted them to know what it was that we were listening to and what was inspiring us as bands. And that's why, you know, we choose the bands we choose.
Well, Lowwater is definitely one of the bands we're keeping an eye on here at National Rock Review. So we definitely enthusiastically give 2 thumbs up to that one. Now, with the hopefully Czech local listings, spring right around the corner and all the good festivals coming, are you guys scheduled to play any of the big festivals in the loudest month of music?
Welcome to Rockville and Carolina Rebellion. Those are really the only 2 of those kind of big monster rock and roll festivals. We're trying to stay away from them because, you know, the record we're trying to veer more away from that active rock format and allow ourselves to be more of the alternative community. So we're being very selective about the festivals that are being offered to us.
Okay. Now, what is the first single that's off the album, or is there more than one out at this point?
No, Vexatious is the first single, and I think that we're trying to decide what we want to release next because there's so many good songs on this record, it's really hard to pick just one. The nice thing about Vexatious is it was an entirely different sound for us, and I think that the audience that's been listening to it on the radio are seeing that we're moving forward, and the response has been amazing. I know we're climbing the charts 2 or 3 spots every week, which is good. That means that people are paying attention and they want to hear it, they're calling in and requesting it. So Vexatious was an obvious start for us. I know the label wanted to go with a song called God's Gift Tonight, but that's not the right song. It's too obvious. It's not where we want to be. You need to turn people's heads, and this is a song that will turn their heads. And I'm glad they listen to me and it's happening.
Now, apparently, if the birdies are true, you will actually be credited with creating the word that the song title. How did you come across, or how did you make that word to turn it into such an interesting title?
Well, vexatious actually is a real word. I want to say it's an adjective of the word vexate, which is a legal term where it's called irritant regardless of the argument. So, you know, to constantly say I object, or to argue a point to the point where the judge goes, you know, you're wrong. It's not going to happen. It's just to belong or to berate the situation and or to irritate. And that's how the song came about for me. I was in Bali, and there was a young girl that was sitting there in the sunset, and it's a beautiful beach, and she's just taking selfie after selfie. And I'm oblivious to the world around me. Oblivious to what was happening, oblivious to the beauty that she was surrounded by. She was more concerned with herself. And I realized at that point that this is the world that we're living in. No one is aware of the surroundings. We're all so self-absorbed, myself included. And that's how the song came about. But I didn't make up a word. I wish I had. But it's, I think it's a good one, and it sings right. It's got the right syllables for the way I think, the right word here.
Okay, fair enough. So, for those that are curious about picking up a copy of the album, is there a pre-sale going on right now, or where would be the best place for people to pick up the album when it does drop April 22nd?
So if you want the fancy stuff, I would go to pledgemusic.com/shandabox. That's the vinyl, the signed CDs, the t-shirts, all that stuff. But we just want to get the download. And both Pledge and iTunes give you the four gratis tracks up front. But iTunes is another easy way if you just want it in your inbox when you wake up one morning, very much like you too, except in the situation you actually ordered it. But yeah, I mean, I think it's on Spotify as well. The four songs are on there. I mean, we're releasing it everywhere, and the hard copies come out every 20 seconds. So if you just want to wait to go to the record store and buy it, you know, do that. But I would do the Pledge thing just because you can order vinyl. That's one of the really and signed by us. You know, that's one of the coolest things about that campaign.
Okay, cool. I'll have to definitely check that out. Now, there has been kind of a deal where a lot of bands, big and small, are offering VIP packages in addition to a simple meet and greet. Can fans get that on this tour, or is that something that you really didn't want to get into?
Yeah, you can do it. It's an upgrade, so it's not like the $125 bullshit. If you've already bought the ticket, you practically pay $40 or $60, I can't remember what it is. And you get a shirt, you come in and say hi to us, and you sign whatever you bring, and you take pictures with you. You know, it's one of those necessary evils, you know, because the fans really want to get close to you, and as much as you'd like to be anonymous and stay on the bus all day and just do sound check, it's a different world. You know, you have to make yourself available to these people that love you and have given your career for as long as they've given Candlebox hours. So I'm totally down to do it. But yeah, I think you can do it from a Facebook page. I'm not really sure what the company is that offers them, but I know that they're available on a Facebook page.
Okay, cool. Very cool indeed. Well, we wanted to thank you very much for giving us a little bit more of your time today, and we won't put any more miles on your voice because it sounds like you definitely could use the day off, well deserved. So we will definitely keep our eye on you, and when you come to the Detroit metro area, we'll definitely have to sneak over and buy you a nice bottle of Chardonnay or something, and just watch a wonderful stage show.
Oh man, thank you so much.